My name is Jacqueline Turner, and it's May the 5th, 2022. And I'm interviewing Aida Peary at the Street Sense Media office. And we're going to start our interview by asking her to introduce herself.
Hello, everybody. My name is Aida Peary, and I am a vendor, an associate writer, actor, and work part-time for Street Sense Media.
Okay, let's start by when you were born and where you were born at.
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio in the year of 1955, December 6th. And I don't know anything about Cleveland, Ohio. If I were to go there today, the only thing I remember is a little girl. I moved away from out of the projects on the east side, that's what I was told, of Cleveland, Ohio. And we moved to Shaker Heights, and I really liked Shaker Heights a lot because it was like a small community, and everybody seemed to be really nice and everything. And I used to, when it rained, my mom used to dress me up in my bathing suit so I can go outside and play in the rain. So those were the great memories. I mean, I miss those days. And then after we left, my dad, you know, back in those days, I guess in the early 60s, you know, work was hard to find. And some of the factories were closing. So my dad had to leave away from me and my mom and my brother for a while to try to find work. He found work in Chicago, Illinois, the city of Chicago. And once we got to city of Chicago, my mother didn't come with us, which I thought was kind of strange.
Can I interrupt you for a minute? From what you remember about Cleveland, did you like it? Or
I don't remember anything about Cleveland, Ohio. I left Cleveland, Ohio when I was 5 or 6 years old.
Oh.
So we moved to city of Chicago because of work. My dad couldn't find work in Cleveland, and he went to go find work in city of Chicago. That's where I remember from 6 years old up until I was an adult.
Oh, so you came from a two-parent household?
No. When we left, my parents, my dad took me and my brother to Chicago, but my mother, for some reason, stayed behind, and I didn't understand it why, but I found out later on why she ended up staying behind for a few days or a month or whatever. Yeah.
So they didn't separate anything, right?
They did. They separated.
Oh.
But I didn't know that at the time.
Oh, okay. Let's move on. What are some of your best memories about your childhood?
Once we moved to, after we left from Shaker Heights, which is like an outside suburb from Cleveland, Ohio, and we moved to city of Chicago, I remember, you know, we lived on the south side of Cottage Grove, and it was kind of hard to make friends. And then when I did finally make friends, it just seemed like I couldn't keep them because my parents, or at least my dad, kept moving and moving and moving and moving. Then finally we moved on the south side, which was, I went to O'Keefe Elementary School, and I had a really good time as a little girl because there was apartment buildings, and this we're talking about.
Can you like describe it a little bit?
Well, it was like big.
No,
it was a flat. It was more like units. I don't know how many units it was in that building, but I know it was units. But it was mainly houses. And when I used to go to school, I used to walk to school every morning and back in the evening. And there was one particular house that I used to love, and it reminded me so much of the gingerbread house. And I used to love that house. I even got a picture of the gingerbread house with the little old lady. The little lady, you know, will eat up all the kids up and stuff, you know, give you some gingerbread and lure you into the house.
Yeah.
And I used to be like, I wonder who lives there. You know, it was just out of curiosity. I just needed to know whoever lived in that house. And I passed that house, I think, for like 2-3 years, and I never saw anybody go in or come out until one day on Halloween, my dad took my brother and I to Halloween. Well,
That's interesting.
He wasn't with us. He was from a distance because he wanted us to, you know, to enjoy our Halloween. Because back those days, nobody was hurting children during Halloween back in the 60s. And I said, I'm determined to knock on this gingerbread door. And sure, the Lord to behold, the woman terrified the heck out of me because it was an old woman. She comes to the door, and she's dressed like a witch. Hmm. And I just screamed.
Yeah, I know
and
you won't forget that.
And she handed us gingerbread.
Oh.
I'll never forget that, ever, ever. And I was like, no way. And... well, later on, as I got, you know, the following year, it was just really weird. My dad had, you know, as I got older, my dad had remembered that story. He remembered that incident. And he said that the old lady, she just let people know that everybody thought of her house of being a gingerbread house.
Uh-huh.
I was not the only child that
yeah.
thought that. And she figured, well, on Halloween and special occasions, why not dress up like the witch and do gingerbread? And when she had to think about it, because she couldn't imagine her house looking like a gingerbread, but she literally had to get out of her house and look at the story, the fable, and look at her house. She's like, I'll be darned. You know?
Yeah.
She was, like, stunned. She had no idea that her house looked like this, you know, fable, you know, this story that the kids, you know, grew up with. And so she just said, okay, well, I'll just make it more interesting for them. And so those were some of the great memories I had. Also, the other great memories I had is my dad. We weren't rich, okay? And we weren't really poor, but we weren't rich.
Mm-hmm.
So every weekend, my brother and I would go with my dad to a movie. And then I stayed with the babysitter or somebody, you know. And he would then one time he took both of us to the movie because he was able to have enough money. And we went to see Mary Poppins.
One of my favorites.
Oh, man, that was my favorite movie. And I had a hard time to say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. My brother, he got it just like that. But me, it took me a long, long time. And then, of course, we moved again, but this time on the north side. And we lived in Old Town Gardens. And that movie etched in my head so much that I love when Mary Poppins used to take her umbrella and just, you know, fly across the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived on the third floor, and I've been wanting to do that. Right?
Okay, I hope you didn't try it.
Now, this now, I had sense enough to ask my dad about it. My father took that umbrella away from me. He said, don't you dare do that. He said, this is not going to work like with Mary Poppins. And ever since then, I was really sad about that. But, you know, with things and itches in children's minds, we need to talk to our parents more.
Yeah.
You know?
So that stands out in your mind
yeah,
as a memory.
Yeah, it stands out a lot because we don't look at it as being a fictional movie. We're just looking at it as it's something real.
Entertainment, yeah.
Yeah, so good thing I asked my dad because I would have been dead probably.
Yeah, but I guess it is hard to distinguish between... you know, what's real and what's not.
Right, what's fictional
yeah.
and non-fictional.
Especially when you're young.
Mm-hmm.
Got adults with difficulty with that.
I did learn that in fourth grade about fiction and non-fiction, but I did not realize that Mary Poppins was, you know, a fictional movie. I had no idea. So I'm just like, yeah, those were some of the memories I remember. And then there was this one girl named Mary Pruitt. We were best friends. And we used to go up on it. We used to get so bored sometimes, right? And it was in the summertime. What the hell? And we used to blow up balloons and put water in it and dump them on everybody coming out of work.
Oh, my goodness.
Or we got in trouble. You know, because back in the days, back
anybody
in the 60s,
ever come back?
No. Back in the 60s, everybody looked out for everybody's children. And trust me, My dad came up there on that roof, and me and Mary Poole whooped us both. Whooped us both for throwing water on them people.
And yes, we got in big trouble.
And when you throw water on the suit, the suit's no good, normally. And my dad whooped my butt. And I said, how y'all know? Well, people saw you do it. And I'm like, what?
Busted.
Busted is right. Then we used to play handball, and I broke this lady's window, and she wasn't home, but she found out it was me. That's just like I'm saying, the people, the adults, always looked out for everybody's children in my neighborhood. It didn't matter if you were white, black, Polish, whatever.
And they knew who you were, right?
They would tear your butt up and then tell your parents, and then your parents will whoop you too.
Yeah. So that's a good, they say each one, teach one,
yeah,
and it takes a community.
Yeah, that's how they protect the community back in the 60s, you know. And if you talk back to any adult, oh my God, that's not only your ass, get your butt whooped, but you were grounded, and then every time they looked at you, they whoop you again.
Oh my goodness, overboard, huh? Keep on the right track.
So... those are, you know, some of my fondest memories as a little girl, you know.
So does any place stand out in your memory of, like, restaurants or anything? Like, sometimes when I think of certain foods, I think of my home. Is anything like that come to mind to you?
No, you better eat what the was put in front of you or don't eat at all.
You didn't have no favorites or favorite restaurant or anything?
Girl, we couldn't afford no restaurant.
Okay. Even McDonald's could, you know.
McDonald's was a treat, but trust me, they didn't have all that big-ass menu they got today. It was either a hamburger or a cheeseburger and fries and shakes. That was it. That was the whole menu when I was growing up. They didn't even have a fish sandwich.
Really? Come on now. I find it hard to believe. Who did the cooking, you or your dad?
My dad or my mom.
Well, all right then. Jay was cooking you good food and things that was nutritious.
Yeah.
So you didn't like none of them favorites, like my mom's spaghetti? I still think about it. She's dead now, but I still think about it. Okay, well then let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
No restaurants to come to mind. Or what about the city itself? Has anything, like, have they built up or tore down or, you know... made it, if you wasn't, you know, born in D.C., maybe you can look back and see since you've been in D.C., how much has it changed?
What, D.C.?
Yeah.
I used to live in D.C. back in 68, 69, because my mother, she was an associate professor at Howard University filling in for somebody. And we were here. I went to New Deal middle school, junior school. And... it was only for about a year, and we lived over on the southwest side, southwest, over by, I can't remember the street, but we lived in one of those townhouses. And, you know, it's funny because that was, I'm talking about 68, 69, and it's, D.C. changed a lot because I remember...
Aida, can you... kind of go back where you was and tell us how it was when you moved to D.C.?
Yeah, I moved here between 68 and 69 to Southwest, and my mother was teaching at Howard University and filling in for a friend of hers. And I did notice the change because we used to live in a townhouse near I-295. And in fact, I lived right on the side of it. You know, and then we had a swimming pool, and we used to go swimming, and we also,
Sounds nice.
And yeah, it was really nice, you know, and it was just developing. In fact, it was nothing but all dust and dirt, you know.
Like a suburb.
The only buildings that was around was the buildings that are the high-rises they have right now. They were pretty much fancy high-rises back then, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people know they're pretty expensive today. But behind those buildings, there's actually townhouses. And then you can see some of the townhouses. I think, I can't remember what street that is, but it's right across the street from the HUD. Anyway.
So they done a lot of developing in that area.
Yeah. So when I came back, and my mother, she bought a house in D.C. in the 70s. I think it was 1971 or 1970 or something like that, and in North, in Petworth.
That's a good neighborhood too, right?
Huh?
That's a kind of a good neighborhood too.
Yeah, so she bought a house there, and I left to go back to Chicago because I like Chicago. I really did. I like Chicago, you know. I
mean, so what did you miss about Chicago?
Well, because I had friends. I grew up there from six up until I was, you know, I had children and so forth, you know. I mean, before I had kids, I mean, that was just my home.
Yeah, because you had been there.
I lived there all my life. So anyway, my mom, she decided to buy a house in D.C., and I tried going back during the early 80s. And I really didn't like it. I didn't like it then in the 70s, and I really didn't like it. As I grew older, I didn't like D.C. I just didn't. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that D.C. was kind of backwards and just, like, late for everything and anything.
I guess they consider D.C. a southern town.
Whatever. So, I just didn't care too much for the people. I wanted.
Would you find them unfriendly?
Because in Chicago, we have a diversity of people. We live in diversified neighborhoods. No, we all don't always get along. No, we don't. But then we're able sometimes to be able to talk, you know, with mediators like the police.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not all the time, but
I hear you.
Chicagoans. We get along. Even the racist ones get along with us. Yeah. You know, everybody gets along. Everybody knows who's a Chicago. Everybody knows who's raised in Chicago. You got people that come to Chicago, and they adopt to Chicago, and they just don't know the code of conduct.
That's where, how to carry themselves, right?
Yeah, right. They send stuff out of pocket. And then they try to do stuff like robbing people. Like these two white girls, I'll never forget this shit. I said, okay, they ain't number babe. We used to call them babes because they're from the South Side and they're short, but they're not to be, okay?
They were dangerous.
So anyway, that's what the guys used to call them. I don't know why they call them that. But anyway, it's like a gang or whatever, not per se. Well, anyway, this black guy, he's coming down the stairs, right? And we have like a tunnel, you know, a tunnel to go to another train area or whatever. Well, anyway, as he was coming down, they were going up. He decided he was going to try to pickpocket that white girl. She did it so quick. She just grabbed him.
She beat him up?
Yeah, she beat him up.
Oh, my goodness.
She got her money. She got her money. You hear me? Oh, he was he thought he was going to clip her. He said, oh, no. She said, oh, no. And she a little thing, too, about your height.
Oh, my goodness. She was to be reckoned with. I bet he won't try that no time soon.
He was taller than her. And I said, okay, he is not from Chicago. Everybody said it all at once. He's not from Chicago.
Well, they think because you're small that you're defenseless, or they figure that women weren't aggressive as men, or what?
I guess they thought the white women was, you know, because they were small, you know, they're
submissive.
Not aggressive.
Oh, no, I hear you.
They are.
That's a big mistake.
That's a big lie.
They like that in Massachusetts and Boston. Them women are not to be played with.
None of us about to be played. Anybody that's from Chicago is not to be played with, period. You know, we're just trying to do our thing, go to work, do what we got to do, go home, not to be bothered, whatever.
And my sister lived in Illinois.
Yeah.
So tell me about Street Sense. How did you get involved with that?
You know, we have a paper in Chicago, too, called Streetwise.
Tell me about it.
We've been around way longer than Street Sense.
Okay.
But I never got involved with them, but my aunt did. And she owned a bookstore on Clark Street in Chicago. And she used to buy the paper and try to get people involved with the paper. But I guess the paper had changed over the course of time and so forth, because now it's like, it almost looks like a magazine rather than a paper. But it's still $2. But I never sold any papers, you know, but I used to read Streetwise once in a while. So what happened was when I came here to D.C. again on a third try of trying to live here, I went straight to college. I had my mom, you know, raise my kids. My son didn't like it. He didn't like D.C. too much. He wanted to be hanging around with his brothers and his dad and whatever. So I said, okay, you go there, blah, do what you got to do. Then my daughter, she stayed with me. She pretty much grew up in D.C. She knows a lot about Chicago. She always wanted to go back home to Chicago. Is this something when you're raised and born there, you just want to go back home?
So like, when you came back then?
When I came here, I went straight to college to finish my bachelor.
That was the 70s?
No. I came back here in 2002.
Oh.
Okay, with my daughter.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the fashion, what was hot then. But I guess they're pretty much the same since 2010.
I don't know. I don't think so? I didn't come here in 2010. I came here in 2002.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. When you came back in 2002, what was the fashion like? Was they as open as they are now, you know,
Far
as peekaboo fashion?
When you're raising children, you don't... Fashion goes out the window because I don't know.
I ain't talking about for yourself. I'm saying for your daughter, since she was like a teenager then, right?
My daughter was 5 or 6 years old.
Oh, okay.
I had children late.
Scratch that.
No. And she had to wear a uniform.
Oh.
So I don't know what it was because I didn't have enough money to buy anything, not even for myself. Always pissed.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Yeah. Everybody's not born with money.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I came here and went to Strayer University. I got my bachelor's degree, and then I tried to find a job.
What's your degree in?
Networking.
Networking. That sounds like interesting. How you work that out? You just use that to get yourself hooked up with good people and good money?
I couldn't find work when I graduated in the year 2005, so I decided to go back to school and get my undergraduate degree in information systems.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to land into a job with the Pentagon, DOD, and I ended up in their, co-op program. And then from the program, I ended up with their internship program. Mm. And they paid me a yearly salary. And then once I started working for them for five years, and then out of the blue, when they were moving from the Skyline, Virginia, to Fort Meade in Maryland, between the end of where everybody's moving, that I was let go because they couldn't give me a SCSI, which is one of the highest clearances. And I, to this day, I don't understand what that meant, but I was trying to find me a job. I couldn't find a job, you know, within a year. Come on.
Oh, that must have made you very disappointed.
Well, yeah, and then I depleted my savings, you know, and I got a one-time rent from the city of D.C., and that was one time. They couldn't do it again. And then
they left you out.
Girl, please. Then after that, I had to, I ended up selling some stuff and telling my daughter she got to go stay with her grandmother because I'm going to be in the streets. And voila.
Gee.
So I ended up in the shelter, but I didn't get in the shelter right away. I slept in the streets.
Gee. Now tell me about that. How did that feel? And wasn't that discouraging?
It was humiliation. Okay?
Oh, my God.
Lots of it. Humiliation. All right?
I didn't feel
good about myself about it. You know, I was pissed.
People don't understand that.
But yeah, of course not. But you know what? It really doesn't really matter to me because, you know, if anybody says anything about anybody being homeless, okay, they're going to have to get hurt.
Right.
And they're going to get
because
hurt.
It's not an intentional thing that people set out to do.
Oh, well, I lost my job, and that's the reason how I became homeless.
And it could happen to anyone at any time.
From payday to payday, hell yeah. And that's what happened to me. You know, even though I saved some money, but I was saving that money for my daughter or my son if they need money for prom when it comes up, or they need money for, you know, school stuff, you know, field trips, whatever. That money was for them. And, of course, for me to give me a new wardrobe.
Of course.
You know.
Don't forget the shoes.
Yeah, whatever. So, anyway, that's I ended up trying to spend it on paying bills, and that ran out. That's gone.
So you're a strong woman. You had to be a strong woman to go through that.
Yeah, I know what dude was strong.
Yes, you do. You got to have perseverance.
It don't matter. They ain't about strong. I was not.
Some people just give up and go crazy.
Well, I gave up. Well, I went.
You didn't
crazy.
Go that way.
Yeah, I did.
Not really.
I wasn't happy. It was a lot of depression.
Yeah.
I started drinking.
Yeah.
What I shouldn't have been doing. But
things happen.
You know.
But you overcame those obstacles.
I overcame them because I found out about N Street Village, and it was a daycare center for women, and I was able to unwind and relax and take
Well,
it
tell
easy.
Us about that experience.
Well, that experience is that you have different workshops you go to during the day. They feed you breakfast and lunch, and then, of course, you do little chores here and there, you know, helping, you know, wiping off the table or you know, wiping the table before they all sit down, whatever. And then you go to different meetings, and you go to, it's an hour meeting.
Are they therapist groups or just women discussing?
These are groups for women only, and women who take time from their businesses that they teach, like yoga.
Mm-hmm. Mentors.
Yoga, or you could do dancing. Exercising, what do you call that? Aerobics,
yeah, Zumba, aerobics,
you
stuff
know,
like
we did that.
We
did all kinds of aerobics. We did knitting. I learned how to knit. I learned how to crochet. That's something that you know.
Soothing.
Yeah, just great things. You know, they had everything in there for a woman except for the darn set of swimming pool. I told them, if y'all got everything for women to do. Except for the swimming pool and, of course, the sauna.
Well, did they have therapists? You said that it helped you with your drinking. Did you go to AA?
They have an AA and they got NA.
Or was just keeping busy?
What?
Was it just keeping busy that stopped you? Or was it something specific in the industry that helped you or lured you away from it?
Well, once you start doing activities, you don't uh-huh. be thinking about. And then, plus, I ain't had no money to drink.
Okay,
that does help. That has a lot to do with it too. I mean,
all righty then.
If you ain't got no money, you can't buy nothing to drink.
Sure, you're right.
One day, I was at the shelter at CCMV, and it actually was Open Doors. And I ran into this lady, and her name happened to be, and she's also a vendor here. Her name is Deborah Brentley. And she told me about, why don't you come in and work for Street Sense? And I'm like, well, what's Street Sense? So she was telling me about the paper, how you sell it. And I was like, oh, hell no, you know?
Yeah.
No way. So I'm just drifting around and around and around. So I ran into her again the 2 days later, and she says, you know, Aida, you really need to come to Street Sense, you know. Do you know how much money I made today? And I said, no, how much? She said, $80. I said, I'll be there. So she told me to be there at the Street Sense on Thursday or Tuesdays at 2 o'clock. I came here to this church, 10, 11 years ago. And at the time was Alan. Alan was the manager here and for the vendors. And he just asked me for my ID. He just showed me the rules of conduct. He gave me 10 papers. He gave me a temporary badge. I went over there by the Portrait Museum over there not far from where the library is. And I sewed on that corner every morning. And people were just passing me by, and I said, what is going on? So something told me to pray, and I did. This lady came out of nowhere. Actually, she looked like a young girl, but she was a young lady. And she said, today is my birthday, and I want to buy 10, and I want to buy 10 more. And I only had 10 papers, mind you. So I told her, if you want to come back with me to, you know, to Street Sense, I can get some more papers and sell you more papers. And that was after the second day of me being on the job.
Well, that was
good. I actually sold $20 or $40 worth of papers.
That was really good.
I know, for
yeah,
my,
an experience
yeah,
like that.
Right, and I felt so happy, and she was happy getting them to me, and she said she has a huge family, so she needed these, four, you know, 20 papers. And I said, wow.
That's a great incentive.
Uh-huh, so ever since then, I've been, I've been selling my newspapers, and then, of course, you got vendors, male vendors claiming that you're on their turf because you missing for 2 days from that spot and all this. So I went and found me another spot on 14 and 9, and I said, ain't nobody going to get me off of here.
Right.
So I was doing 14 and 9 and 14 and K. They ran me off of 14 and K, but I said, well, this is a big, huge, long block here.
Right.
I'm going to 14 and 9. And that's where I've been ever since, and nobody could run me off of it from that point on. And I made a lot of customers. I've accumulated a lot of customers from that point on. I was always there at the same time, same day, whatever. I did that Monday through, well, up until Friday. And then I heard about the markets, you know, DuPont Circle on Sunday. And then I heard about another market on Saturday somewhere near what's that? Chevy Chase or something by
Sheriff
over in that area. And then I went over there a couple of times and sold my papers. So I was, you know, doing.
Do you find it
well.
Any different on the outskirts or in the city? Which you think is the best? Selling on the outskirts of the city or inside the city? Downtown.
It doesn't really matter. As long as there's a lot of people, as long as you can find people.
Traffic.
And traffic, right.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you can find traffic, everybody on foot, people coming out of the stores, buying all these little fancy little trinkets and outfits and so forth, you're going to, you know, get paid. You're going to get paid. Definitely going to get paid. And I got paid. And, of course, my articles pay. Also,
yeah.
I got paid through my articles, too.
Okay, so would you recommend Street Sense for anybody?
I would recommend it to anybody that needs a supplement of income. I recommend anybody that just wants to get out of the house. I recommend anybody that to do Street Sense and sell Street Sense because you're going to meet with some fabulous people. In fact, I wrote an article about how I wanted a job. And this guy that he was my customer all the time, I never knew he was a CEO. So you can't judge a book by its cover.
Right, I hear you.
I'm telling you right now. And you treat everybody nice just the way they are. Because you don't know who is who out there. Because they're not going to tell you. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, he gave me his card and he asked me, he says, are you really sure you want a job? I said, yeah. Right across the street where I was selling my papers on that corner, he told me to go right over here during the holidays. It was because everybody had gone home or went on vacation or whatever.
Right.
And he said, you're going to speak to a lady named Miss Connie Woolen. And I got dressed up and everything, and I went to that building. And sure enough, she greeted me downstairs. We went upstairs. She did an interview. And then she asked me, how did you know about Rich? I said, Rich? I didn't know him by Rich. I knew it by his last name, you
uh-huh.
know. And she says, yeah, he's the one that gave you the card and told me about you, you know, wanted to have a job and be an office girl or whatever. And I said, oh, really? He says, yeah. I said, well, what is he to this organization? He's a CEO. What?
I bet you that was surprising.
Yes,
to
Lord.
To say the least.
He got numerous, multiple awards when Clinton was president. There's an actual picture of him and President Clinton standing next to each other. Now, you know, the man was important.
It's a VIP.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I worked there for about, not a whole year, because they were having money problems. So, you know, whoever first to hire, the last to get fired. But at least I got two.
And it did help, right?
Huh?
It helped you a lot, didn't it?
Yeah, it helped a lot. And I've gained some more skills, you know. So what happened was they said they just had to let me go because they couldn't afford me. And I got a month of, what do you call this, servitude check?
Severance pay.
Hey, I couldn't, you can't beat that. A lot of people got fired.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the different ways you are or have been involved with Street Sense? You write articles, you sell a paper, you recommend a paper. Is there anything else you want to tell us about Street Sense?
Well, also, Street Sense has all sorts of different workshops here.
Oh.
They have, they had the watercolors. They just started that today.
Oh, that sounds good. What you do there?
I drew a picture that our teacher told us to draw.
Oh.
But I added some birds to it.
But, that sounds nice, though.
It's a lot of fun. It's you know, relaxing.
That's
and
what
then,
I like.
Let's see, what else they got? They got a writer's group, and we can write articles.
Yeah.
And then if once the article gets into the newspaper, you get paid for it, you know, in cash, not newspapers. It used to be newspapers, and now it's cash.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can write anything you want. It doesn't necessarily have to be about homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
But
what do you think is most misunderstood about involving with Street Sense? Because I know they do a lot of good things, but people don't know about it.
The good things that they do is that they have an acting group that I really, really like. It's called Devising Hope. And we work with high school students along with the teacher, the art teacher. And we do actual shows after about 3-4 weeks.
Mm.
And we usually do it at the Bus Boys and Poets.
And oh, that's
then
great.
Then we go to another place somewhere, you know, in Virginia.
Y'all do videos or short movies or what?
No, we act. We do acting.
Oh, plays.
Yeah, we do plays.
Oh, I've seen something like that on, Tacoma Park Community.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it did say Street Sense.
Mm-hmm.
So how long they been doing that?
We've been doing that for quite a few years. Devising, Stage or Hope or something is supposed to be coming through soon, too. So I'm going to try to participate in that. And then it's all acting. We do stage acting. We do a lot of stuff. And it's really a lot of fun, too.
Boy, y'all make y'all own costumes and things?
No, we just have our own outfits on. We write the scripts, whatever the scripts is about. And we do the scripting. And then, of course, the teachers show us how to do it and how we, you know, practice our work, our lines and this and that and the other. No, we don't have costumes or nothing like that. We wear what we have on.
In different topics, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it all involves, like, homelessness or it's about family problems?
No, it's not
problems.
Always about homelessness. Okay. It could be about anything. It could be about everyday life.
Oh.
It could be anything.
Like anything. Seinfeld, about nothing?
Yeah, something like that.
That was a
whatever.
Joke.
Whatever. Okay. And then, of course, we used to have knitting, you know, but we have to have people that wants to actually
be involved,
want to be able to do this for an hour or whatever.
Are there more people, well, you wouldn't know.
What?
Are there more people selling Street Sense now than in its, like, early 2000s, or is it less people now? Maybe that's why they don't have as many people participating.
Well, a lot of people don't participate in is probably because they found work or they moved or they passed away.
Oh, yeah, the pandemic had to have taken out quite a few vendors.
Yeah, so.
I guess they're more susceptible to that. Let them rest in peace. But they have, you know, other things like counseling for, like, now they got a caseworker. Has that been here all the time, or is it something they just started?
This always been here. Colleen, I don't know if you remember Colleen. She was doing that kind of work, and then there was doing counseling, and then there was another lady before Colleen and so forth. So they've been doing this stuff.
So they do counseling and they help people to find jobs and places to live and stuff like that?
Yeah, help them with their resume, help them with this and help them with that.
Oh, that's
IDs
great.
And stuff like that.
Doctor's appointments and stuff?
Well, I hope not. People should be able to get their own doctor appointment.
Well, if you have some issues, you know, some of us have issues.
Well, I don't know what they talk about. I don't know what the heck they talk about, okay?
But it's available if they need it, right?
That's not my department. I don't know.
But they do have caseworkers to help, right? That's the bottom line.
They're not caseworkers. You need to talk to them.
What do you call them? Oh.
You know what, Jackie? You need to talk to them. You're a vendor, too.
I didn't know because I know that man that he said that he was a caseworker, and he said that he could help my friend because I said she was homeless, and he said, have her come in to see me. So I made a fool of myself. I just assumed that they would help you in, you know, all the different aspects.
I don't know that.
Okay.
Jackie, you have to go and find
sure,
that
you're
out
right.
yourself.
Yeah, I have to ask somebody else. Okay, I can understand that. Okay, so what kind of changes would you like to see as far as addressing homelessness in governmental level?
Well, I think that some of the people that staff that claim to, because they're getting paychecks, you know, that for permanent supportive housing. And that's a program that I'm in, and I happen to be living under the... And some of those women are very, very nasty. The staff are very nasty. Mm. They tell lies. I got a refrigerator that I've had for almost 2 years, and it keeps freezing up my food at the bottom part where the food should be just cold.
Right.
And I don't have... They won't... I've been trying to get a new refrigerator, buy a new refrigerator on my own. And I don't need to be going through all this. You know, I'm wasting money after money after money. So I think that, you know, women who... I'm grateful that I have a roof over my head, but I am not grateful for half of the staff at all. They're the most rudest, the nastiest people I've ever dealt with. And it's only one or two staff members that are decent people. But they're just, you know, part of the fish of the pond, and they just doing the best they can do. They're not nasty or anything, but they're good people. You know what I'm saying? And you need people like that heat there. Like one time I was taking medication and I got proof of that, you know, from my doctor that I was having a skin problem.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor said it's going to make you drowsy. Sure did, because I couldn't take it here at work, okay, or be selling them newspapers. Okay?
Because it made you drowsy.
Right, exactly. So I waited until I get home. So I was taking it on every hour, because I had to take it every hour, okay? Mm-hmm. So they gave us these machines, like filter machines. The thing kept clunking out. I didn't want it. It was overly big anyway for the little itty-bitty apartment I had, you know? So I took it back downstairs around 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And the lady comes out. She said, well, you can't. I said, look, I got frustrated. I will admit. Yes, I did cuss her out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, things
and
happen.
Told her to keep this damn thing here. And she wrote up a letter against me saying that I appeared to be intoxicated.
Oh.
And that, you know, and I cussed her out. Well, yeah, I did cuss her out, but I was not intoxicated. But
it seems like they don't have a lot of understanding.
But the thing is, if I was intoxicated, why didn't you do a piss test?
Yeah.
She couldn't do that? That's defamation. And
that's,
then
that
thing
seemed
I know,
like the first thing all, she would do for evidence.
And I'm going to tell you what else happened. Three women were able to move out of that apartment building into beautiful homes.
Oh.
And I got skipped over because of that, because they wrote me up. I'm done with that program.
But 42 housing, and they put you in an apartment, though, right?
Yeah, I'm not supposed to have been stayed in that apartment building as long as I have. I should have moved on into a one-bedroom or two-bedroom, whatever I can afford, and get into a new apartment. And they keep passing me up because of that write-up.
That's not fair.
It's not fair, but you know what? That's what... They don't even have the damn building open so my grandkids can come in.
And so you can't have no visitors?
No visitors whatsoever.
So the first thing you would change is that the way that they run the place.
Yeah, this is the way they run the place. I asked her about my refrigerator. She's telling me Then I got to wait for the lady who gave me the refrigerator in the first place, and she knows I had a problem with the refrigerator. Now, what you tell me, is that...
That seemed totally unfair to me.
It is unfair, the whole thing.
So what you got to do, wait a minute, I'm going to ask you this question.
They're not organized. They've had fights, physical fights. Two women have had two physical fights. When women have physical fights in that building, they're supposed to pack their bags that day. They're out of the program.
Sure,
no,
you're right.
Not those two women. The same woman is still there. And the other lady, she got another apartment through them. And got a brand new apartment.
That's favoritism.
Yeah.
So what you would change is the favoritism.
The favoritism.
The overlooking, the lack of empathy, and the lack of help.
So I never had any asthma until I moved into that building. Mm. They got a poor air, that's why they got the ugly filters up there. Putting in everybody's apartments and carrying on. Because the air quality is horrible.
That is.
And they got roaches, and that's a mouse that I can't get. They keep giving me all these stickies, but I'm stepping on them. Because my apartment is so small.
That sounds like a horrible place.
It's a horrible place. Where I live at, yes, it's horrible. Mm. Yes. And how you not be able to help me get me a new refrigerator? But I got to wait for the lady who gave me the refrigerator. And I've been complaining to her before I met her. So on a governmental level, yes, these people are getting a government inspectors need to come in.
I thought they did that.
Though. No, they need to come in. See, they need to come in.
See, this is the propaganda that they tell the public.
This is and I'm in the permanent supportive housing program. And they need somebody to come in and definitely check out what's going on. And when I signed up 6 years ago, they told me that I could have my grandkids before the pandemic, which was happening, okay? Now, all of a sudden, she going to send out a letter talking about it came to her attention that there's a few women, yes, do drugs.
Oh, my goodness.
But they're not distributing drugs.
Well, if they are, don't they do tests every so often?
I don't know. I don't do drugs. I don't do drugs. Though if they think a cigarette is a drug, then let them be. You know? I don't do drugs, period.
I understand that.
If they want to sit there and say whatever the heck they want to say, that's fine with me.
Do they do random drug testing?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, because you ain't involved with that.
I'm not involved in that mess.
I hear you. Well, how about the pandemic? How that affected the living situation.
The pandemic? I don't know. She claimed that everybody that I talked to have gotten their vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
But they so backwards, they instead of having somebody come in there to give us the vaccine, they just have somebody there to test if you got COVID-19 or not, which is stupid.
If anybody came up positive, what would they do then?
I don't know. They just quarantined them, I guess.
Oh.
I don't know.
Mm. Ain't that something?
It's
okay.
Over
I don't want to hold you up. But you've been very good and very helpful, very informative. And I think a lot of people would like to hear your story.
Yes, they need to. And they needed to get an inspector here. I've been trying to call one.
Okay.
And every time I call the inspector.
Well, we really do appreciate you talking with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank you very much.